Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balanchine. Thanks for being a part of the show with us. We're presented by BetDSI.com. You can check us out on our website, GolfNewsNet.com. Find all my work on Yahoo Sports' Devilball Golf blog on Sports.Yahoo.com. And you can also find Golf News Net on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at the handle Golf News Net. We've got mobile apps for your Apple and Android devices. Sorry if you have a BlackBerry or Microsoft device. What a terrible life choice you've made. We are presented by BetDSI.com. BetDSI.com has our weekly odds that we use in our European Tour, PGA Tour, and Olympics odds posts. And we like them because they tell you the percentage of money that's on any player to win, place, show, whatever your bet is. And it also gives you live updated odds 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whenever it's available and up on the board. So BetDSI.com for all your needs. This week's show, we want to talk a little bit about the Olympics, the men's Olympic golf tournament, which is now complete with Justin Rose, your gold medalist, and the ongoing women's golf tournament, which is now basically two rounds in by the time we're recording this on Thursday. And the overall reaction to Olympic golf, not only among the golf community, but also within the larger sports population and the captive audience that NBC has for the Olympics for the, 17 days that the Olympics go on. And my initial reaction was, man, a lot of people were wrong about this, and including, in part, me. And we've done a whole podcast on what golf screwed up about the Olympics, what it did wrong. And many of those things are still true. But the fundamental fact is, we got a really good golf tournament out of a 60-player field that just so happened to produce, as its medalists, arguably the three best players in the field, at least based on their pedigree. Bubba Watson would be the other guy, probably. It's like, all right, yeah, he probably should have been up there. And he was a part of the equation, too, a little bit. So to have Justin Rose win, to have him beat the reigning Open champion, Henrik Stenson, who was coming at him on another torrid pace. He's 42 under par in his last 12 competitive rounds, and that includes the Open, the PGA, and the Olympic tournament. And then to have Matt Kuchar, aside from that match play situation, storm up the leaderboard on Sunday, shoot 63, tie the course record set earlier in the week by Marcus Fraser, and snatch the bronze medal, and then be in the most Kuchar way possible, happy about it, that he was in third place, happy that he walked away with a medal, happy that he got something from the experience. I don't think you could have really asked for a whole lot better. That we basically had a playoff for the gold medal with nine holes to play was pretty awesome. Great golf, a winning score at 16 under par, so it wasn't like, it was more like an Open Championship or a PGA than a PGA, or certainly than a U.S. Open, more than a Masters. You know, Masters tries to hold the score around 10, 12 under par, unless the weather intervenes. And so I think we got a really, really great golf tournament, a great experience. We had some names on the board that were young and up-and-comers. I think of Thomas Peters, who I think he has the lead today after the first round in the Czech Republic on the European Tour. Guys like that who got up on the board and you figure probably weren't going to put it together for a medal in this situation because they haven't done it many other places week to week. And they still put on a good showing, and that experience, this Olympic experience, could mean something for them from years to come. Maybe not on the level of a major, but maybe so. Maybe to know to have your country basically counting on you for a medal, especially in a country like Belgium, other countries that don't necessarily get tons and tons of medals in the Olympics, at least in the Summer Games. And those guys, those young guys from those countries had an opportunity to show off something in the Summer Games that was, I think it's a good learning experience for a lot of them. I also found it really interesting that the medal stand was guys who are basically 35 and above, and that the guys who embraced this tournament the most were the older guys. Save for Ricky Fowler, who, if you are to believe the New York Post, was hitting it hard on Tinder over the course of the Olympics before coming back to the States. And hey, if you want to do that, good for you. You are free and clear. Go get them. But he embraced the Olympics for a different reason than guys like Bubba Watson and Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson and Matt Kuchar and others, guys in that 35-plus set, who said, I may not get to do this again. I'm going to come and do it. I've done most of the damage I'm going to do in major championship golf because it is quickly becoming a young man's game. It's quickly becoming a game of guys who win majors typically in their 20s instead of their 30s, maybe their early 30s, save for the Open Championship, and you get an old guy winner. But by and large, major championship golf is won by the guys who are the youngest and the most powerful, who just happen to be able to putt. This wasn't that kind of competition. This golf course made you think. It made you plod your way around. It made you work the ball. This Gilhance golf course was brilliant. And I don't know if it's still going to be around in 5 years, even though it's supposed to be a public course and supposed to be maintained and kept around for 20. Lord only knows if that's going to hold on, given what we've seen from the Brazilian government leading into the games and knowing that the folks behind the Paralympic Games, the organizers of those, which happen basically just a few weeks after this, in the same venues. Golf is not a part of that, unfortunately. And that's another story we're going to do for golfnewsnet.com. But that they need to borrow $200 million from the national government of Brazil just to be able to run the Paralympic Games. So these guys are spending out the wazoo. They're already big into debt. They could barely afford these games as they were. So I'm not necessarily counting on them to maintain this golf course for 20 years, much less five. However, this was a masterful golf course. And if it could be replicated somewhere, I would love to see it done. Like if you could have Streamsong, I know he's doing Streamsong Black. If you could have Streamsong Black be the Olympic golf course, more or less, that would be awesome. And I think that's actually what's going to, not exactly be, but you're going to get a sense of the Olympic golf course in Streamsong Black. But that's coming down the line. So kudos to Gilhance for designing an incredible golf course that was a wonderful test that challenged these guys without any sense of rough whatsoever. There's no rough. None. There's just native areas. There's sand. There's bunkers. There's some water. But by and large, this golf course was about angles and being able to execute to the right spot to set up the next shot. And the subtle breaks on the greens were also important. And they remain important in the women's tournament that's ongoing. This was great. The right guy won the contest. The right course came out of it. And while I would have been interested to see some of the other bids come to fruition, this was the one. This was the right one. And I think all of these things came together to make Olympic golf a very strong showing, to have guys who are clearly interested in it, who were competing and were in there for a medal. To have a one-on-one showdown for the gold medal was absolutely important. To have a really interesting race for third place, ultimately settled by a guy who shot around that was incredible, tied the course record for the week, and then shows so much interest in finishing third, saying he'd never been happier about a third place finish, staring at that bronze medal, probably still staring at it, sleeping in it. Really cool. Yes, there are things that we can do to improve Olympic golf. And none of those things, by the way, have changed since we recorded the How Golf Screwed Up the Olympics podcast from a while ago. There's still things still apply. A 72-hole stroke play tournament by itself is boring unto its nature. Fortunately, it turned into a match play situation. So we could forget that it was 72-hole match play because all that mattered was what happened between Stenson and Rose. So we ostensibly got a match play event from a stroke play event. And I'm not saying we need to go in 2020 toward a format that promotes match play. That does not have to be the case. However, there does need to be some kind of team component to this. There just has to be. I don't know how to better explain it than what you saw in the evidence. I mean, we had basically three guys in it, and two were really in it at the end. And I think what we want for golf is the opportunity to have as many countries medal as possible. Obviously, with six medals, we've got, with the introduction of a potential team competition, or for men and for women, we have the possibility of 12 different countries getting an Olympic golf medal. That's good. So I think we need to introduce a team competition, whether that's aggregate score between countries, whether that's better ball between countries, which would be really neat. That would be really super cool, especially if you didn't pair the teams together every day. If you still had the pairings done by the individual competition, but the better ball piece of it done by, at the same time, basically. So that if you had the guy that was going to win the golf tournament at 7 under par, but his partner was like 5 over and starting, he needed to birdie the last 3 holes or something like that to improve the score and maybe get on the medal stand for the team, there's added pressure there. I think that would be really interesting. And I don't think we've seen that format. I don't think that exists. So that would be something unique to the Olympic tournament. And it wouldn't necessarily kill the character of having the kind of qualification system that they do. I would change things in that regard that you shouldn't have just, you couldn't have anywhere from one to four. You can have multiples of two. You can have two, four, or obviously zero players from a country. You could still have 60 players if you want to do it, but the way I would set it up is very much akin to what they do for the World Cup in terms of team selection. The highest ranked player that qualifies and chooses to play gets to pick, not gets to pick their partner, but they get the next highest ranked player as their partner. And then if you have four players, not in the top 15, but let's say in the top 30, 40, whatever number of players we need to get to make this kind of interesting, to have a couple of four-person representations, then the next two highest-ranked players get in, and they're the B team, and they could steal spots away. I think that would be really cool, especially for golfing nations like the United States, like Australia, obviously Korea on the women's side, South Africa. You could have A and B teams if it all pulls out. I think that's good because then you get more star power from the countries that are most interested in golf. But you also get teams from other countries that give them an opportunity, potentially if one of them or both of them has a very good week, to medal and for it to mean a whole lot. So that's what I would look at in terms of the format for 2020. I believe that golf will continue beyond 2020 in the Olympic program. Based on what we saw and what we're seeing right now from the women, I think we're going to get a really good finish out of them in a totally different way. We've got Stacey Lewis up there. We've got Imbi Park up there, Minji Lee. So very, very much household names in the world of women's golf up there on the board. And then you've got some young players like Nicole Brock Larson. You've got Aditi Ashok. You've got Abilene Valenzuela. You've got a lot of different names up there that are young players. I mean, Valenzuela is an amateur. She's going to Stanford in the fall, and she's got a chance to win this thing. And then you've got established players who are very much in tune with their country's representation. Stacey Lewis is right up there on that list in terms of rah-rah patriotism among her peers. You got Imbi Park, who could potentially be walking away from golf competitively at the end of this year to raise a family and because of her thumb injury. So there's a different intrigue to this tournament than from the men's tournament. And if we get a good finish that's different in character, then I think that goes even farther or even further to proving to the International Olympic Committee that golf can be interesting a lot of different ways for both men and for women, and that, and I should say this as an aside as I'm thinking about it, why don't we have a combined component, like a combined nations component, like a man and a woman, and their combined score determines a medal or something like that, but come back to that idea. But I think that golf has showed the IOC that it deserves a crack beyond 2020 and that it can rally a competitive tournament, an interesting tournament, and it can do it pretty much anytime. There are enough compelling characters in the game to make it interesting. And I think in 2020, there will be not an assurance, not a guarantee, but as close as we're going to get to those words from the top players that they're going to show up and they're going to compete. Especially on the, namely on the men's side, because 20 of them skipped. And that we're going to get the top four players in the world. They're going to say yes. And they're going to say yes because, one, they don't have an excuse anymore. Olympic golf was good. Tokyo is imminently safer, other than the potential earthquake risk, than Rio de Janeiro. They'll try to find a way, I think the PGA Tour will, this is another thing we'll talk about, to schedule better. And the marketing opportunities abound in a golf-crazy nation like Japan for an Olympian. And they can find plenty of ways around that. So golf will try to exploit that the best that they can versus playing golf in a country like Rio de Janeiro where there are 20,000 golfers for 200 million people. It's just not happening. There's not much there to market outside of, hey, we're in the Olympics. So I think we will see a turnaround in that type of participation. I think that the PGA Tour and golf's governing bodies would be very smart to get together now and think about 2020. We're going to be in Japan in 2020. That's where we're going to be. So you need to think about this now in terms of scheduling. Are we going to have an event the week before? Are we going to have an event the week of? Are we going to have an event the week after? Where is the PGA Championship going to fall in all of this? If we do all of these things, are we going to impact the participation? Or do we do what the LPGA did and said, hey, we're going to go dark for 2 weeks, and then we're going to come back, we're going to get on the Olympic stage, we're going to have our big moment, and then we'll get back to normal business the week after. I think that's the smarter approach. I think that means moving the PGA Championship in terms of date earlier in the year. Obviously, we're not moving the PGA Championship overseas, though that thought was given of potentially doing that a few years ago. I don't think we can do that. We obviously have a named location for the 2020 PGA Championship, so that's got to be in our minds. But I think if you set up the schedule such that you have that PGA Championship in San Francisco, you could still keep it pretty close to the normal date. Because if you do that by having the PGA Championship out there, then you give these guys almost no excuse whatsoever to skip. It's like, hey, we're as close as we're going to get in the continental United States to Japan. You hop on a plane and you get over there. And then maybe have a tournament the week before if you would like. In Asia, maybe you have the WGC HSBC champions bump up, or I guess later with the way we do it now, but bump up in terms of the calendar year, but later in the season, so that you can have a tournament in China to capitalize, get everybody over there, get them feeling comfortable. Then the guys who aren't participating, they can go wherever they need to go, and the guys who do participate take that flight to Tokyo. And then they play the Olympic tournament, and then we come back. We have a week off, and then we have the Wyndham Championship and do the rest of the thing. Yeah, we do the playoffs and then end the season. So I think that's the way to go for 2020. Will we do that? I don't know. I think that the PGA Tour probably recognizes that it could have done a better job in setting up the schedule to optimize for Olympic golf. Because the European Tour did it. They went dark. Now, for them, it's a little bit easier of a task to go dark than the PGA Tour. But they went dark, and they said, hey, we're gonna put the emphasis on the Olympic golf tournament. The PGA Tour needs to do this. I know that Tim Fincham and his successor, Jay Monahan's job, is to create playing opportunities. It's to make sure these guys can make a living, make money. But by not clearing the calendar ahead of time, you are sending a signal that the Olympic golf tournament isn't all that different than your standard issue golf tournament. And so you need to be able to send that signal very clearly, because actions are symbolic, but they do matter. And if you can make it matter that way by saying, all right, well, you know what, we're gonna clear the schedule. This is our number one priority for a few weeks. We do this once every 4 years. Let's do this. I think that's the way to do it. We don't have an opposite field event against the Ryder Cup, and that is every 2 years. We don't have an opposite field event against the President's Cup. That's every 2 years. So why do we have an opposite field event against something that happens every four? Just doesn't make any sense. So let's clear that out, and let's get that moving. The one piece of this that, to me, didn't quite fit the bill, I think, was the manner in which NBC treated Olympic golf. And this is totally selfish, but if you look at the ratings for the men's golf tournament on Golf Channel, on the hours it was on Golf Channel, so it was on basically from, what, 6:30 in the morning to about 3:30 in the afternoon, Thursday through Sunday, except for the 2 hours, more or less, 2 to 3 hours before the finish on Sunday. You got about 400,000 or 500,000 people watching. It was like your standard issue early action PGA Tour event, Thursday, Friday, and then usually early Saturday, Sunday, Golf Channel has the coverage. And that's kind of what the number is normally, unless you get like a Players Championship or even a WGC or Tiger coming back or something like that. So the ratings weren't all that interesting for that part of it. Then they went to NBC in the afternoon on Sunday when people are just vegging out to the Olympics, and the ratings went through the roof. Second highest watched golf telecast of the year behind the Masters. So that tells you that having a captive Olympic audience can do a lot for the sport. So I hope that in 4 years in Tokyo, and of course this is probably going to be tape delayed, that NBC finds a way to get more hours of the golf tournament on live on NBC, or at least in the window on Sunday when people are going to be watching it the most, when people are will literally watch any Olympic sport, those people, because that's what golf got. And I think it was a little bit of a risk to air so much of the golf tournament on Golf Channel. Golf Channel did a tremendous job. I thought they did wonderfully. However, and the presentation was pretty cool. It was different because it was minimalist. It was kind of like a European tour production a little bit. But by taking the risk of airing so much of the Olympic golf tournament on Golf Channel, you're effectively locking out anybody who could be a potential casual golf watcher, someone who's like, I've never watched golf before, but it is the Olympics, I'm going to watch it. So-and-so from my country is involved, or I like this country, they've got someone involved, whatever. You've locked them out, because even though Golf Channel is in something like 90 million homes in the United States, and people pay for it, that doesn't mean that they know where it is on their channel lineup. It doesn't know that they know to look for it. They weren't really prompted very well to go look for it by NBC, I don't think. Just kind of shoveled in there, like, all right, yeah, yeah. I think that was a problem. So I think in 4 years' time, that needs to be promoted a little bit more. If you're going to have basically the Golf Channel be the Golf Olympic Channel for those 4 days for the men and 4 days for the women, eight competitive days, then you need to make sure people are aware of that. And I think that's the way that we can improve the viewership numbers on Golf Channel for that in 4 years. Now, again, in 4 years, I can't tell you how we're going to watch TV. I can't tell you how we're going to consume all of our content. I can tell you that fewer people will watch TV, fewer people will have cable TV subscriptions, more people will stream coverage, more people will have over-the-top boxes. So this discussion in 4 years may sound foolish, but I think that there needs to be more promotion behind Olympic golf being on Golf Channel, because not everyone knows where Golf Channel is, and not everyone cares to have ever watched Golf Channel, even though they did a good job. They need to be prompted to do that. So that's the only part I thought from the, at least American perspective, of promoting this was a failure. But it sounds like it was great in other countries. It sounds like the ratings were wonderful in Great Britain. Obviously, Justin Rose winning helped that. I think they might be strong with Charlie Hull in contention going into the final 2 days in the women's event. It sounds like Henrik Stenson brought a crowd to Olympic golf in Sweden with ratings that compared to the Super Bowl for Olympic golf for the final round. So in countries where there maybe is a little bit of a golf pedigree, there's a little bit of a golf footprint, to get those countries with medal contenders, it sounds like they really tuned in. And I think that's a positive sign. That means people were drawn to golf a little bit more because the Olympics were involved. Just for the same reason I watch Olympic fencing, handball, water polo, all kinds of crap that I don't watch the rest of the next 4 years because I don't have any connection to the game whatsoever. But when it comes on and a country's playing, or it's on and there's nothing else on during the day, you're damn sure I'm going to watch that. And that's what golf is for a lot of people. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that as an industry because we think, oh, well, we're here. There's 25 million Americans or whatever the number is that play golf. So many people have to know about golf. All the rich people play golf. Everyone knows golf's in the Olympics. And nope. So we need to be cognizant of that and treat things accordingly. Like, act like nobody knows what's going on. And if you act like nobody knows what's going on, then you'll promote it a little bit more, and hopefully that'll get people involved. Now, all right, the final question before we kind of wrap this whole thing up for the week is, does this do anything to hashtag grow the game? I'm not sure that it does. And I wrote a column for Yahoo saying that golf did deliver drama. It showed it belongs in the Olympic program. And I do believe that we will get some player at some point in time who decides, I'm going to pick up a golf club because I saw the Olympics and I saw golf as part of it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get this radical explosion of worldwide participation. Because in many countries, most countries, if not 75 to 80% of countries, golf is a rich person's game. Golf's for rich people. I would argue golf's for rich people in this country, by and large. At least high-level golf is. Normal golf, not necessarily. But in a lot of countries, golf is for the rich only. And that means that for the average person, golf's not an option unless countries invest large sums of money, not only in terms of building golf courses that are accessible to the average person, but providing equipment and training and opportunities for young people to become golfers and expose them to the game, improve their talent, give them the tournaments, give them the experience they need, get them pro so that they can earn more world ranking points, all of these things. And that's going to be hard to do. It's going to be really hard to do. So I don't think we're all of a sudden going to see hundreds of millions of more people play golf. They might go to a Topgolf or a driving range or something like that, but I don't think all of a sudden we're going to get an explosion in population, because that's just the reality of the sport. It is not easily affordable. And in other countries, it's definitely not easily affordable. And I think that goes to tell you a little bit about the struggle golf has. That, and we've gone over this a zillion times, golf's too hard, takes too long, costs too much. Well, those things still apply in other countries. And they apply even more so because you work 17 hours a day for crappy wages, so you don't have 5 hours to play golf. You work for crappy wages, so you can't afford golf clubs, so there's that. It's too hard because you are doing other things to raise your family and make sure that you have a reasonable standard of living outside of hitting a golf ball. All of those things still apply. So I'm not anticipating that all of a sudden we're going to get a big explosion. But I think golf is successful as an Olympic sport if it can encourage some high-level players to come out with that inspiration. Just like the first tee is successful if that happens. And Scott Langley is really the first professional to do that. We'll see more of those people. But, again, that's not the mission of the first tee. And that's not really the mission of the Olympics, I don't think. Not to get millions of people to take up the game. It's to inspire some to take up the game. And hopefully those some stick around from a young age and become great golfers that expand the footprint of the sport in the future. So this is a long game. This is like long-term play. So I think that's something interesting and important to keep in mind as we kind of sift through the results of this. But for most of you, unless you work in the golf industry, you don't give two craps about whether to screw the game or not. You just want to make sure you had a good time. And golf did that. So golf is successful for 99% of people who watched it. It was a good time, and we got a great result. And we'll get it again this weekend with the women's golf tournament. So kudos to everybody involved. Kudos to all the competitors who really embraced the Olympic movement and being a part of it and everything that came with it, because that spirit was evident not only in how they played, but also in how they represented the game to the people in Rio, to the people back home, and what it meant to them to be a part of the Olympics. And that will be a good thing long-term for professional golf, hopefully for some of amateur golf. And so long as I'm entertained and you're entertained, then it was a good day. That'll do it for us this week on the show. Next week, we'll talk a little bit about the Women's Olympic Tournament, how that all wrapped up, a final takeaway from the 2 weeks of Olympic golf. We'll get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, as they will start at the Barclays next week at Bethpage Black, which is exciting. And we'll break down some other news from the week as well. So please give us a 5-star review if you listen to us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Not many of you do it. So those of you who do, it means a lot. It helps us out and helps reach more people with our show. So if you could do that, we really appreciate it. If you want to send me a note, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com with a comment or question, that would be great. If you want to follow me on Twitter, @RyanBellingy is the way to do it. And that would be much appreciated as well. Till next week, I'm Ryan Belge saying thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.